to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, it's a pet care day on the show, and thank you very much for joining in. Our guest is veterinarian Dr. Marty Greer. She founded Veterinary Village. It's a small animal clinic in Lemira, Wisconsin. She specializes in canine pediatrics and reproduction. And we're going to kick off the show by talking about your pet's hygiene with her. And I hope you'll join in. Which shampoo do you use on your dog? How often do you wash Fido? Have you ever washed your cat? I haven't. Call in. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Marty Greer, welcome. Good to have you back.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So cats and dogs, especially cats, have ways of keeping themselves clean, but sometimes they need the help of their humans. How clean do we actually need to keep our pets?
Well, since many of them are now sleeping in our beds, not just in our bedrooms or our living rooms, they're in our beds, we tend to want to keep them a little bit cleaner than we have in maybe past generations. So certainly things have changed.
Yeah, and I doubt that there are many people out there who have over-cleaned their cat or their dog. Is there such a thing even?
Oh, I think there is. I think if you bathe them too often, you can end up drying out their skin and causing some issues. But, you know, every pet has their own set of needs based on their coat type. If they have a continuous growing coat like a poodle-based dog, or a Portuguese water dog, the ones with curly coats that continually grow Bichons, Schnauzers, or if you have a pet that doesn't have a continually growing coat like a Labrador or a Golden Retriever, those are going to make a difference. Of course, cats are a whole different entity into themselves for cleanliness and their exposure, because many cats never go outside. So their exposure to the outside, bringing in insects, you know, fleas and ticks and things like that, are going to be less. But you know, when our pets are up close with us, they're on the couch with us, they're hanging out with our kids, they're in the beds, then I think we really want to make sure that we're keeping them clean and that we're doing a good job with flea and tick control products as well. So there's a lot to it. And it also depends on whether your pet has a skin condition. If your pet has allergies, rashes, you know, problems along those lines, hot spots, things like that, that's going to change the kind of coat care that you also need to provide. So it's important that you work with your veterinarian and your groomer so that you're all aligned with the same kind of thoughts as what kind of shampoo, how often, what kind of products we give orally, those types of things, so that we can really keep our pets as clean as possible.
Yeah. Let's say your cat or your dog smells kind of bad, but we can't figure out why. Where would you start as a pet owner in figuring it out?
You know, that's a really good question, because a lot of people don't know quite where to start. It can come from the skin. If they have oily skin, seborrhea, a skin condition where they're losing hair or developing rashes, that's often seborrhea. That can be bacterial. That can be allergic. So we want to look for that. Oftentimes, if the odor is coming from around their head, we're going to be looking at their teeth, of course, the obvious. But sometimes the odor comes from that drainage that they have from their inner corner of their eyes. So that'll give them a smell. We can feel that there's a lot of odor that comes from a lip fold, which is that little crease on the lower lip of dogs. Their upper lip tends to flap over it. And a lot of dogs, as they get older, that fold gets deeper and it'll accumulate bacteria after they're done eating and drinking, and that will create some odor and a skin rash. And then, of course, there are the ears. So we never want to forget that the ears are a contributing factor for a lot of dogs. And if you lift the ear flap and it's red, or there's discharge, or it's painful, or it has a bad odor, then you may have a yeast or a bacterial infection. Again, that needs to be addressed really specifically. And then there's the other end of the dog, which oftentimes turns out to be an anal sac problem or an anal gland problem. So again, some dogs will, and cats will, have problems with their anal glands. So that can be addressed by your veterinarian, by your groomer. There's several different ways to do it. Some people will learn to handle that themselves. Most people want to count on a pet professional because they don't really like the idea of that. So you kind of have to do the sniff test and figure out where exactly the odor is coming from so that you can address it more targeted than just giving them a bath and hoping that that fixes the problem.
Yeah. Wondering about brushing. I know my two cats like to be brushed. How often should you brush your cat or your dog's fur?
Sure. If you have a long-coated cat or a long-coated dog, then frequently daily is necessary. And that does significantly cut down on the amount of shedding that they do. So instead of having to have a housekeeper or daily vacuuming or having one of the little automated robot kind of vacuum devices, that can significantly cut down on the amount of coat that's lost. And actually, combing works better for a lot of pets than brushes. Brushes tend to kind of skip over the surface. But if you can get a metal tooth comb, not a fine comb like a flea comb, but teeth that are a little bit wider, there's a comb called a greyhound comb, and it works really well for most dogs and cats. Now, I don't know why they call it a greyhound comb, because greyhounds don't have enough hair. They really need to be combed. But it's a long comb. It's about 8 inches long, and it has teeth that are close together on half of it, and teeth are a little bit wider on the other half. And you can really get down to the skin. And if you have a pet that doesn't like the amount of time it takes to comb or to brush, this, you can comb them pretty fast and get a lot more coat out in a shorter amount of time. And so that pet can be more cooperative about it, because you can get more bang for your buck with a comb than for a brush.
That's interesting. Matting, I know that can happen with some of the longer-haired animals. What do you do? Cut it out? How do you get rid of it?
Yeah, and you do need to cut it, but it has to be done really carefully, because unfortunately we see many pet owners that, with good intentions, try to cut the mats out and then end up with a little bit, getting a little too close to the skin, and we end up putting those dogs or cats back together with sutures. So you may want to work really closely with a groomer. Many of the dogs that have that continuously growing coat, the Bichons, the Schnauzers, the Poodles, the Doodles, those frequently get groomed every 6 to 8 weeks. So if you have one of those dogs, just set up a standing appointment, find a groomer that your pet likes, find a groomer you like, and just put yourself on the 6-week schedule so that every 6 to 8 weeks, your pet is going in for that kind of grooming. And that's going to prevent a lot of mats. And it's a lot more comfortable for your pet than having you pull hard on the mats or, you know, having to trim them back. So just get yourself in with a good groomer that loves your pet and that your pet is happy with. And you can tell. I think groomers are magical people. I don't really know how they can get pets to do the things they can. Because a lot of them work by themselves, and they can get that dog to sit on the table, and they can trim around their face and their ears and do their whole body clip, give them a bath, and they go home looking beautiful. At the vet clinic, they don't let us do a lot of the things that they let a groomer do, like nail trims. So please find a groomer that your pet likes that works out for you. Sometimes they travel to your house. Most of the time you go to them. And during COVID, a lot of grooming changed. It used to be that people would leave their pet for several hours, and the groomer would bathe one, pop it in a cage with a dryer, bathe the next one while the one was drying, and so they would work on multiple pets at a time. But during COVID, many of them just went start to finish. And start to finish is especially important for our older pets that have a difficult time standing for an extended period of time, or being stressed by being at the groomer and being away from you for an extended period. So find a groomer that really clicks with your pet, and you're going to know if your pet likes the groomer by their reaction when they get there.
You mentioned trimming claws, and my favorite neighborhood dog is Lila, and she goes to the vet to have her claws trimmed. And it's an important thing, and it's kind of an exacting thing, too. I mean, you don't want to go too far, but yet they still have to be trimmed.
Right. And again, that gets back to being really regular about the nail care. If you let them get too long, it can be really hard to trim them back. So you want to keep them short from the time that they're little on. So even as young puppies and kittens, we should start trimming their nails probably on a weekly basis so that you never get them too long. And then a lot of people have found that nail grinders or Dremels work really well to smooth off those edges. So you can get a nail grinder that will work really well to keep them shorter, and the pets oftentimes are more comfortable with that nail grinder than they are the clip. The other thing that's kind of cool, and this only works for the front feet on dogs, it doesn't work really well for the back feet, but you can get what's called a nail board, and it's basically a piece of lumber that's about, 2 feet long by about 10 inches wide, and you can attach sandpaper to it. Now you can buy them that way, or you can make your own, and then you teach your dog to sort of scrape their nails on the nail board. And that way they've kept their nails short and smooth all by themselves. And a lot of dogs like that digging action. So instead of digging holes in your backyard, you can get them to do the nail board, shorten their nails, cut down on the trips to the groomer or the veterinarian for nail trim, and keep their nails much healthier. And if their nails get too long, it's not just unsightly, but they can disfigure their feet. They start to push their toes into an unusual position. Sometimes they grow around and into the bottom of the pad. So it really is a medical condition that we keep them short. It's not just for aesthetics or for keeping your hardwood floors nice and smooth. You want to make sure that your dog's nails are in good shape for their own sake as well.
Let's talk about washing for just a minute. Shampoos, is there a difference among the pet shampoos?
There's huge differences. There are many pets that all they need is a good cleansing shampoo, just something that's going to get rid of the oils and the dirt and those types of things that they bring in. But for pets that have medical conditions, if they have hot spots or allergies, those kinds of conditions, there are specific shampoos. There's salicylic acid that is in a lot of shampoos that breaks down the oil in the coat and the extra flaking. There are antibacterial effects. There are some that have steroids in them to reduce the inflammation in their skin. So you should, if your pet does have a condition, speak to your groomer about a medical-based shampoo or your veterinarian about the kind of shampoo that's going to give you the best outcome. If you're going to go to the trouble and expense of doing the bath, you might as well do one that works most effectively. And while I was at Super Zoo, I was just at Super Zoo last week, I came across a product that I think is really fascinating for a lot of dogs with skin and ear problems. And remember, ear infections frequently go with skin problems. Their ears, ear infections are just skin down in a tube, down in their ear canal.
Yeah.
So it's not all that different than the skin, and a lot of people don't think of it that way. But there's a new product that has come to market. It's a combination of silver sulfadiazine and Manuka honey. So it's a really nice cleanser, a really nice antibacterial product without it being an antibiotic, and it's not a prescription product. So it comes as a spray, it comes as an ear treatment, it comes as a shampoo. There's a number of different ways that this product is delivered. So it's called Silver Manuka Honey, and it's really a pretty cool product that you don't need a prescription for and can get you at least enough of an effect that if your pet is uncomfortable, itchy, miserable, scratching at their ears, you can at least get them some kind of relief while you're waiting to get in to see the veterinarian. And some pets have such bad skin disease that even a regular veterinary clinic is going to refer you to see a dermatologist for specialized care.
Dr. Marty Greer, our guest today, veterinarian. She founded Veterinary Village, a small animal clinic in Lemira, Wisconsin. We'll take some calls now. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Sarah Hopeful, our engineer today, Clara Neipert, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network, looking at your pet's health today and your pet's care, keeping your pets clean and always with our guest, Dr. Marty Greer, who founded Veterinary Village. Dr. Greer, it's a small animal clinic in Lemira, Wisconsin. She specializes in canine pediatrics and reproduction. We've been talking a lot about hygiene, and Ron in Beulah, Michigan has a question relating to hygiene, I believe, in a way. Let's go there. Ron, hi.
Hi, thank you. Yes, I just had my 12-year-old Labrador's teeth cleaned. I had been doing them every 2 years, but her breath got really bad this spring, and when they did clean her teeth, they found out she had two that the roots were exposed and they had to be pulled. And in the process of pulling them, one of the roots broke off underneath. And the veterinarian didn't seem to be concerned about it. She said she didn't want to dig around for it and that it would be okay. Is that something I do need to worry about, or will it be fine?
Well, many times that root will resorb on its own once the offending tooth crown is gone. So it probably is going to be okay. It's just something to keep an eye on. And your veterinarian is correct. You can do damage by doing too much work to try and extract that root. There are certainly cases that the jaw can be damaged. The eye socket can be damaged. So it is important that your veterinarian took the precautions to be conservative. And sometimes more on cats than on dogs, that root actually kind of ankylosis or becomes part of the jaw. So we don't want to do too much damage to them. And Typically at age 12, you're probably going to be okay. If it starts to give trouble, then a course of antibiotics and another anesthetic procedure to try and see if they can get that piece loosened up would be appropriate. But by age 12, many times the dogs do fine if you leave the root behind.
Yeah. And dental care, very important to your pet's overall health, is it not?
It is, and we tend to think of it as just being a bad breath issue, but it's far more than that. There are systemic effects, just like you hear in February for Dental Health Month for people. We can see problems with infections that cause problems with the kidneys, problems with the heart, systemic illness. So it's more than just, oh my gosh, my dog has bad breath. It really does lead to systemic disease. So important that we do a good job with brushing their teeth. Brushing is always the superior way to cleanse their teeth. It's tempting to give them chews, and it's tempting to do water additives and those kinds of things. And while those do have an effect and they certainly improve things, it's never going to be as good as brushing. So your dentist doesn't say, oh, that's okay, you don't need to brush and floss. Just eat a piece of cheese once a week and you'll be okay. That isn't really how it works. So we need to do our best job of keeping our pets healthy. And if you start when they're young, not at the time that they're teething, because then their teeth can be a little bit sensitive around the gums where the teeth are coming in, but start them when they're young, getting them used to the feel of a toothbrush, the taste of the toothpaste. There's a number of products on the market that are actually pretty tasty. I've tried them. I actually taste the toothpaste, because if they say they're going to taste like beef or fish, I want to know, does it really taste like that? if I'm going to put it in my dog's mouth, I'm going to try it first. So those are important things, that you look for products that are appealing to you and to your pet, and that, yes, you can give them chews, and, yes, you can do the water additives, but brushing is always going to be a superior way to keep them clean and keep them off the veterinarian's table. While veterinarians really, don't mind doing dental cleanings, they get a lot of – it's a really rewarding procedure for veterinarians and their staff to take a dog that has really unfortunate oral health and improve it considerably with an hour of dental care. It's really best if we never have to put them on our table under anesthesia. And, of course, it has to be an anesthetic procedure in most cases, because pets don't allow us to clean up under the gums. They don't sit in the chair and say, oh, very well. So it's important that we do provide good oral health for our pets.
Ron, thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. Perry and Okada will give you a chance. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Marty. I have a question. I have a dog that is 10 months old. One testicle did not descend. Can you talk about pros and cons? Do you have to do something? What are the cons of doing something or not doing something? Is there a time frame? Because, of course, the dog is very young and is still maturing and needs certain hormones as well, and different probabilities of something that would go on.
Yeah, so he had a 10-month-old puppy there.
Right. And I love that you asked this question, because there's a lot of misinformation out there about this. So, yes, the retained testicle can be anywhere from not quite making it into the scrotum, so under the skin, right in the groin region, all the way up through the inguinal canal and up next to the kidney. So it can be anywhere in there. Depending on the size of the dog, that may be a few inches to almost a foot in that region where the dog's testicle can end up staying. So at some point, that testicle that's retained should be removed, because it does have an increased risk of developing cancer. But that's not going to happen until the dog reaches something like middle age. So somewhere between 6 and 8 years of age is when you really need to say, okay, testicle has to go before we get into trouble from it. But a lot of veterinarians will try to scare you into doing the neuter immediately and removing that testicle with that threat of cancer. But the cancer doesn't develop when they're young dogs. It happens when they're old. Now, there is a slight increased risk of that testicle twisting or having a torsion in it. I've seen that a total of 2 times in 42 years of practice. And I see many, many dogs that aren't neutered. So this is not at all common, but it can occur. I just have to throw it out there as a possibility. But you're absolutely right to think about waiting until the dog is skeletally mature, so their skeleton is done growing. And that happens, depending on the breed, somewhere between probably 15 months and 2 years of age. If you have a giant breed dog, it takes them longer to mature. So what breed do you have?
A Springer Spaniel.
Okay, so a nice middle-sized dog. So somewhere around 15 to 20 months of age, your dog is going to be skeletally mature. We'll go through puberty. Their growth plates will close. All those things that need to happen with hormones will have happened. So somewhere around 2 to 5 years of age is an appropriate time to remove that retained testicle. Now, we have some people that want to keep the dog's hormones completely intact their whole life. And there is a movement toward that, and I support people in that, especially if the dogs are performance dogs, dogs that are hunting, doing agility, any kind of performance work. But even the dog that just hangs out on your couch still should have the benefits of hormones for as long as possible because of the developmental improvements that we see. We see less obesity. We see four kinds of cancer that are reduced by leaving the dog intact for a longer period of time. So all the times that you've been told that your dog is going to have a smaller risk of cancer by neutering him, that's actually not true. We actually increase the risk of certain kinds of cancer. We decrease the risk of testicular cancer, but we increase the risk of bone cancer, lymph node cancer, spleen cancer, and mast cell tumors, which is a form of skin cancer. So you're really good in being forward thinking about this, talking to your veterinarian, making sure that you come to an agreement of when the best time to remove those testicles are. And some people will remove the retained testicle, leave the other testicle. The dog might look a little funny with only one in the scrotum, but it's a perfectly acceptable alternative in certain lifestyles. It's not for everybody, but it can be appropriate in certain lifestyles. So try to wait as long as you can, or if this dog starts to develop behaviors that you don't like because he's intact, like lifting his leg or mounting other dogs, then it is an appropriate time to neuter. But the longer you can wait, the healthier your dog is going to be. And I know that's counterintuitive. I know that isn't what we've been told, but the data is starting to pile up, and there's a study that shows 35 breeds of dogs that waiting to neuter, spay, or neuter is healthier for the dog. And that information can be shared if you Google it. It's Benjamin and Lynn Hart, and it's a 35 breeds of dogs in the study from UC Davis.
Perry, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jane emailed us and wonders if you could spell that honey-based shampoo, if you could spell that out with silver manuka, was it?
Right. Manuka honey is a form of honey. It's M-A-N-U-K-E. I'm sorry, U-K-A. Manuka. And then silver sulfadiazine. It's S-U-L-F-A-D-I-A-Z-I-N-E. Silver sulfadiazine and manuka honey. And you can get that in a combination product. You can get them separately. But I really like the combination product. I think it's going to be a really effective one. The only thing that was a little off-putting is it's sort of gray-looking, and most of us are used to having a cream or a solution that we put on the skin as being clear or white. And it was really, it was gray, you know, no question, it was gray. But it's absolutely, I use a lot of sulfadiazine for a lot of skin problems, and we know Manuka honey helps heal open wounds and infections. So I think it's going to be a really nice product.
Silver Manuka honey. All right. Tom in North Branch, Minnesota, will go to you. Hi, Tom.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm happy that you have this program today. We're having an issue with our cat. She uses a litter box very well. She's about 3 years old. But she's leaving, she's taking a little poop out with her after she's done, and kind of dropping it on the floor around the house. And it's, it seems to be happening more often recently. So I was wondering what might be causing that and what if there's something we can do to prevent that.
Sure. Is she a long hair or a short-haired cat?
She's a long hair.
Okay. And that's probably where the problem is coming in, is as she's self-grooming, she's swallowing more hair, and that increased ingestion will then cause stringiness to the feces.
Yeah.
So when they leave
yeah.
the litter box, they've tried to leave as much as they can behind, but sometimes a little bit dangles off. So combing her frequently, like we talked about earlier, using a greyhound comb, doing good coat care, maybe having her clipped down once or twice a year by your groomer can help. And then just making sure that you've done a good hygiene clip. A lot of people will do a hygiene clip around the hiney of the dog or the cat so that they keep the hair shorter there so it's less likely to cause a problem. Now, treating for hairballs can be a really important tool in this as well. Now, you haven't told me that she's vomiting hairballs, so she might not have that part of the problem, but there's a couple of good products on the market that can help reduce hairballs. There are high-fiber cat foods that you can purchase, all the different companies that have that higher fiber food for hairballs can be helpful. There's a product that's a laxative that basically it comes in a tube, and it's essentially flavored Vaseline. So it's malt flavored so the cat will eat it, and you can put it down the front of their leg. You can feed it right out of the tube. That will help them to pass hairballs more effectively. And then there's a really great product that you can get from your vet. But as far as I know, it might be on back order right now, so you might have to be a little bit patient in getting it. It's called Capilex. It's C-A-P-I-L-E-X. And that will help basically dissolve the matrix of the hair so that, again, the cat doesn't have those long stringy pieces of hair that are catching some of the feces and causing them to hang on as she leaves the litter box, leaving little, you know, clinkers. So those things can all be really helpful in the management of that. It's not her fault. She just happens to have that bit of hair that's causing those pieces of stool to stick together. So the more you can do for grooming care and hairball management, the easier it is going to be on your carpet and not having her leave those droppings behind.
All right, Tom, thank you. Anne in Racine, we'll go to you now. Hi, Anne.
Hi there. Thanks for the show.
Sure.
I have a cat who, she's about 6 years old, and she developed a cough. So we went off to the vet, and she was put on a course of amoxicillin, and it got better, and then it came back. So we had another course, and then it came back, and then I asked if we could do a two-week course, and then it got better, and then it came back, and I asked if we could try a different antibiotic. So she, I think it was doxycycline they gave her, and that really cleared it up, but as soon as the meds, it came right back. And
okay.
Now they want to do something where they put her out and they wash out the inside of her lungs, and they said it, and it just absolutely sounds horrible. And I actually don't really trust my vet. We moved
to do
here
that?
And I'm still on the hunt for a vet that I trust that doesn't break the bank, and this one seems to do that. And I just don't know what to do next.
Sure. So I think those are all really good questions. And the question is, does she have an underlying bacterial problem? Which it sounds like, because it has responded to antibiotics. What was the longest course of doxycycline? Was it more than 2 weeks?
I don't recall. It was a liquid, and I do believe it lasted longer than 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah, because sometimes it can take 3 to 4 weeks to resolve some of those. And have they taken any chest x-rays yet?
They did, and they saw a little bit, but they said there was no asthma. They said there was just a little bit of fluid at the base of the lungs, but nothing. They couldn't figure it out.
Okay. So a couple suggestions. You already have the chest x-rays, so I would ask to see if they could have those sent to a radiologist, a specialized veterinarian that just does x-ray reading, if they haven't already done that. And many times, having a radiologist take a look at those x-rays, they'll pick up some nuances that, as general veterinarians, we might miss. So I'd start with that because you've already paid for the x-ray. It's not that expensive to have the interpretation done. And the tracheal wash that they're talking about isn't as bad as it sounds. We do a fair number of those. You basically put the cat under anesthesia, and it's just a little tiny bit of fluid that you put down there. You're not actually trying to flush stuff out of the lungs for therapeutic purposes. You're more trying to get some cells out of there so that they can look at them under the microscope and say, what's the inflammatory cell type that's here? Is there a parasite? Is there some other reason that this cough keeps coming back? What's the underlying problem? And even though they've said they didn't see evidence of asthma on the x-ray, sometimes we'll find evidence of asthma from the tracheal wash. So they only put a couple of cc's, just a few drops of fluid down. It's not like they're going to flood her lungs, because I agree with you, that sounds dreadful. But they do it through a tube, and then they would wake her up, and it's a pretty short procedure. So those would be some of the things to consider. It's unfortunate that you don't feel like you can trust your veterinarian. You want to try to find somebody that you can work well with. And depending on where you live and the availability of veterinary care, it's gotten a little bit harder since COVID started, because a lot of veterinary staffs are understaffed, and so they're struggling a bit to keep up with appointments and to keep everything going. But you might want to try and find somebody that does feline medicine. Do you live in a rural area or a larger city? Where do you live?
Racine, I think.
Racine.
Okay.
I'm pretty close to Milwaukee, so.
Okay.
Sure. So there are some feline practitioners in Milwaukee. You could consider going to a referral center, which is not going to be inexpensive, but for instance, the veterinary school or some of the referral centers have people that specialize in respiratory disease. So it sounds like you've done a pretty decent job of trying to get this under control with a course of antibiotics, but clearly the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome, and you're not getting there. So I think you need to try something that's different than just saying, well, let's just do another course of antibiotics. Does she go outside at all, or is she exclusively indoors?
Absolutely not. She's an indoor cat. And, you know, they told me they thought that this had to be feline leukemia. And they were insistent. And I kept saying, well, no, she was tested and all that. And they said they insisted in doing the test again. But nope, she's negative for that. She's indoors. Okay. And she doesn't, you know, she eats well. And so.
Okay. Yeah.
So what kind of cat litter do you use?
And what kind
I'm
of,
sorry, did you ask?
What kind of cat litter do you use? Are we lose her?
Maybe this could be. Hello? I asked them if this could be related to dust, and yes. They said no. They said this was definitely not dust related.
No.
So some kinds of cat litter are pretty dusty. You might want to try some different styles of litter. Do you use the clumping litter, the clay litter? What style are you using?
It's clumping. We use two different brands. One is 99% dust-free. It's Dr. Elsie's. And then sometimes we use it with the stuff you get at Petco, which is a little more dusty.
Yeah, there's a new kind of cat litter. It's made by a company here in Wisconsin. It's called Pioneer. So you might want to take a look at that. It is the most effective clumping litter, and so it's going to be the most dust-free you can get, because maybe she's just allergic to the litter dust, and that would be kind of embarrassing to go to several hundred of dollars of a workup when changing cat litters would have solved your problem. So I would really look hard at that as my next step.
Pioneer clumping litter. Okay. And good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Molly in Verona next. Hi, Molly.
How you doing today?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I have a beautiful little 12-week-old Westie puppy that is chewing everything.
Mouse with paws.
I want to know what is the best chew to give him to keep him busy. I've heard that bully sticks aren't the best right now for his age. The nylon he likes for a little bit. He's chewing on that one right now, but he prefers my furniture.
Yes, and that's really tough on the furniture really fast. You get into trouble. And the teething is going to start in the next 4 weeks, so his chewing is actually going to get worse, so that's the bad news, is it's not going to be easy for you. I try to avoid the types of chews that are the elk antlers and the bones and those kinds of things, because they'll splinter, they'll wear down their teeth really, they really do some damage to their teeth. But there's some really nice ones on the market. Some of the Himalayan yak cheese chews are really great because they are soft enough that they won't cause damage to his teeth, but interesting enough that they'll keep his attention. So there's a couple of companies that are making those now. And when you get down to the last little piece, if you pop it in the microwave, it'll puff up and turn into kind of a cookie. So there's some great stuff you can do, and those are easy to find. They're typically about 6 inches long, kind of a goldish yellow and kind of square in shape. So those are great. There's some nice things called licky mats or lick mats. I don't leave those with the dogs, but you put peanut butter, spray cheese, marshmallow cream, something like that on those mats, and that'll keep them licking but not necessarily chewing. And then there's a Kong chew. There's a lot of Kong varieties now. Kong started off with just one thing. It was a snowman-shaped hollow treat that you could stuff with peanut butter, spray cheese. You could put their dog kibble in it and keep them more licking than chewing. And that was a really great tool. And Kong now makes a whole bunch of different shapes. And there's a number of companies that are making the stuffed treats to keep the dogs busy for an extended period of time without damaging their teeth. So you just have to be a little more creative than the dog to keep ahead of it. And that is no small task, because it is normal behavior for a puppy to chew when they're getting ready to teeth.
Okay, Molly, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Sophia in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Sophia.
Hi. I brought home a beautiful 9-week-old puppy. He's now 10 weeks old, and he's a golden retriever, and he just isn't as interested in eating all of his food as I feel like he should be. So I was wondering if you have any ideas on when to, like, be nervous about how much he's not eating versus he's just getting adjusted to our house. So I just have questions about that.
What are you feeding him now?
We're feeding him the same food that his breeder fed him, and so it's Royal Canin puppy chow.
Okay.
And is he underweight at this point? Would you think he does? He feel real ribby when you run your hands down his rib cage, or does he feel pretty filled out?
He's pretty ribby, but when I took him to the vet for his like welcome home appointment, he was totally fine. Like they were not worried.
Okay. So in the last 2 years, we've seen a lot of products come to market that are called meal toppers. So they're easy to find at the pet store. You can find them online really easily, and they're basically a gravy to improve the palatability of the food. I love Royal Canin food. That's what I feed my dogs, and I'm a big fan. So I don't think that there's a problem with the food. But I like the Eukanuba is part of the Royal Canin family. They make a Eukanuba Pro puppy that I've been feeding mine, and when I put that down next to the other food, my dogs went crazy over it. So there's that. There's meal toppers. Royal Canin makes a product called Starter Mousse that can be used as a gravy over the top. So I would try to stick to the dog food version and not spoil him by adding people food, but I would do some things along those lines. How many meals a day are you feeding?
We're trying to feed him three, but because he'll like take a few bites of his breakfast and then like walk away for a bit. And so I've been leaving it out just in case he's hungry later on. The breeder suggested that he's supposed to be eating around three cups of the puppy food a day, but he's maybe eating two on a good day.
Okay. And you've had him for how long?
We've had him for going on 2 weeks, but not quite.
Okay. Yeah. And he's just about to enter a growth spurt. So I would imagine fairly quickly you're going to see him start to really pick up on his appetite. I agree three meals a day is appropriate. And I try to stick to meals because it makes housebreaking a lot easier. If they're eating on a schedule, then they're also eliminating on a schedule. So I would try really hard to stay with that meal idea. Do you have other pets in the family, or is he the only dog in the household?
He's the only other dog, and he's doing excellent with, like, crate training and potty training. It's really – and he's, like, learning sit and everything. So he's, like, a really wonderful dog, except I'm worried that he's not eating enough.
Okay.
Sure. I try the meal toppers and the canned food to see if you can get his appetite more interested.
Good luck, Sophia. Thank you so much for calling. And Mike in Minocqua, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Larry. How you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Just two quick questions. We have a miniature schnauzer, 7 years old, and a lot of times when we're walking him, we walk him on a leash, and he's always eating grass. We're just not sure what that's good or bad or what that's about. The other thing that he's been doing a lot more lately is washing his paws. I don't know if that's like a nervous habit or, you know, he licks him with his tongue. And
sure.
I don't know what you have any ideas about those two things.
Sure. So the grass eating is pretty normal. A lot of dogs like their greens in their diet. So I would just start adding some green beans, lettuce, broccoli, some kind of vegetable into his diet so that he gets a little bit more green stuff when you're in the house instead of when he's out on walks. The foot licking oftentimes is part of an allergic condition. It's especially bad this time of year. August and September are the worst. So if he starts licking his feet to the point of having sores on them, then you want to talk to your veterinary clinic about treating him for allergies. The other thing that can really help after your walks is to wash his feet with just a mild soap solution before you go back in the house so that you've washed off all the pollen that he's exposed his feet to when he's been on those walks. So those simple things can really make a difference. And once we get past a hard frost and his foot licking, if his foot licking diminishes at that point, then we're going to know it was an allergic problem. And you will expect that every summer he will do that. Sometimes it becomes year-round, but frequently it stays seasonal. And that's where your veterinary clinic can really help you. There's some really great products on the market that we didn't have years ago to improve the dog's comfort with their allergies. So talk to your veterinary clinic about those if it continues.
Mike, thank you so much for calling. Dr. Marty Greer, our guest today, veterinarian. She founded Veterinary Village, a small animal clinic in Lamira, Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. You can join in with your questions, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll get you on pretty quickly. taking a look at your pet's health on the program today with our guest, Dr. Marty Greer, veterinarian. She founded Veterinary Village, a small animal clinic in Lamira, Wisconsin. Great to have her with us today, and we'll be taking your calls as we move along. You know, I went online, Dr. Greer, to look at Veterinary Village a bit. Looks like you cover pretty much the whole gamut with six veterinarians.
We do, and we also have two locations in Sun Prairie, so we cover that part of the state as well. So, yeah, we've got a great assortment of veterinarians that are all very talented people.
It looked that way to me as well. Mary in Iowa, her dog has to be sedated to get his nails trimmed. Do you have any ideas that might help him? He's a rescue.
Oh, yeah. And unfortunately, that is increasingly common in what we're seeing is that dogs are really anxious. And there's no shame in having to sedate your dog. It depends on whether you can do it with an oral product that you can pre-dose the medication into the dog prior to the time that you go to the vet or the groomer for the nails, or whether they have to actually do something as extensive as an injection to really almost knock them all the way out. So if there are some oral medications, we use gabapentin, trazodone, alprazolam, a couple of anti-anxiety meds that we can give, Cilio, that you can give orally to the dog, usually 8 hours and 2 hours prior to their appointment. That can help a lot so that they're not as wound up when they get to the nail trim. Sometimes finding a groomer that's really good with the dog instead of going to the veterinary clinic can make a difference. Because, like I said before, groomers are magical people. Sometimes they can talk those dogs into doing things that veterinarians just can't. I don't know what groomers do, but they are amazing. So I wouldn't overlook that as a possibility. So those are some things that you can try doing to minimize the effect. But if he has to have some sedation, there's no shame in that. There's nothing wrong with giving him something so that he's not anxious. We shouldn't put our dogs in a position where they have a significant anxiety problem with something. So don't hesitate to give your dog just a little bit of help along those lines. And the more often you do it successfully without causing him any discomfort, like not getting the nail too short, the better he will start to adjust to the fact that trimming nails isn't going to be the end of the world. But a lot of dogs react that way, and so I think there's something to it. We say to them, oh, that doesn't hurt. But there must be something to it because they all react badly.
Jackie emailed us. They use a topical flea and tick on their dog between his front shoulder bones. They apply it the first day of every month. Is there a good timing to bathe their dog, or will it not wash off?
Right. And you don't want to bathe within about 48 hours of the application of that. It will be picked up and in the oil glands of the skin and then redistributed on the dog's whole body so it doesn't stay localized to that skin over the shoulders. It does distribute through their whole body. But, yes, you don't want them bathed or swimming in the first day or two right after the application. There are also oral products that can work really well, and there's a flea collar called a Seresto that works well as well. So depending on their exposure, and some people will actually have to use more than one product if they're in an area where the ticks are really heavy. Lyme disease, anaplasmosis, Ehrlichia, and other tick-borne diseases are not something we should take lightly. So it's not just keeping the fleas off of our dogs. It's making sure that they don't have exposure to ticks that are carrying tick-borne diseases. There's some pretty nasty diseases out there. So the short answer is don't bathe within 2 days, and otherwise you should be fine.
Glenn in Amherst, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Glenn.
Hi. Glad that you took my call, and glad to have Dr. Greer here with us. I have a question for a kitty cat. We have two cats, two boxes for them, litter boxes, and the one we have to lock up at night, otherwise she wakes us up at 4 in the morning. But occasionally she'll poop in the room that she's locked up in, even though there's a clean litter box in there. We've taken samples to the vet and have them checked out, and she is just fine. But we're thinking about either changing the food or something. We're at a stand, so we don't know what to do now.
Sure. So sometimes using different styles of boxes and sometimes using different kinds of litter can make a difference. So it sounds like she's trying to tell you something that she has a preference for. Sometimes they have a texture preference. They like the fabric. They like something else about the floor or outside the box. Sometimes if they've had a bladder infection, they make a negative association with the litter box because they think litter box hurt them. So I would be looking at a second box in the room. I know that sounds crazy to have tube litter boxes in a small room, but I would try a second box of a different style, a different size, a different shape, a different color, with a different kind of litter. And like I said earlier, there's a lot of different litters on the market. There's clumping litters, there's clay litters, there's some made out of corn cobs and some made out of pressed newspaper, some made out of alfalfa. There's a whole array of different litters. So you can go to the store and just try a couple of different ones and see if you can find one that is more appealing to her, because clearly you want her using the litter box and not failing to do so. But I would try to find an underlying problem for that. You've already checked the stool sample out, so I think you've gone the medical route, but I would try some different things behaviorally.
Good luck, Lynn. Thank you for calling. Lynn in Westby, your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. First, I want to compliment you on being a veterinarian. My daughter is interested in that career path, and I just discovered we're looking at 9 years of college. So about $317,000 at the going rate if she starts at UW-Madison. So I thank you for your commitment to what is a very needed service for animals. We do a lot of rescuing, so we live out in the country. We have 9 dogs and 7 cats. 2 of my cats have kind of developed this kind of oily clumping of their hair along their back and on their hindquarters, and it's not really brushable out. I'm just wondering if you have some thoughts or suggestions on either diet changes or what we can do.
Well, I'd start with a bath, and bathing cats is, it can be a thrill a minute. There are some cage devices that you can use. They're sort of a hoop-shaped, very small cage that you can put the cat in so that it can sit safely and not get their feet attached to your skin while you're doing this. And you can bathe them right through the cage. You can run the water over them and then run the shampoo. And so those are the cats with that oily skin that you want to use something that's going to break down the oils in the coat. So there's some good shampoos on the market. And frankly, Dawn dish soap we know has been used for decades on little wildlife, like little baby ducks that end up in oil spills. And it's perfectly safe on your pet's skin. So diluting down some Dawn dish soap and getting that oily area would really be where I would start, and see if it's just a problem with that. Now, if there's skin lesions, if there's a rash, if there's hair loss, if there's anything abnormal about the skin other than the oils, then I think you should probably talk to a veterinarian about that. But if it's 2 cats in the house, are they related or are they unrelated cats? Do you know?
They are unrelated cats. So they're rescues. They either came from the animal shelter or on a farm. They're often walk-ons, and we spay, neuter, completely vet, test for feline leukemia, and then keep.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah, and those cats oftentimes just need some grooming. And, you know, who thinks about bathing their cat? Not very many people. We would bathe our dog multiple times a year, and somehow we sort of let the cats fall through the cracks on that. So I would do that. And I would absolutely encourage your daughter to pursue a veterinary career. There's veterinary technicians, there's veterinarians, and I'll tell you, it's a great career. The money that you invest is a small amount compared to lifetime earning for a veterinarian. And it is the best job in the world. I'm just going to tell you, it's an amazing job. Every day we get to help people. Every day we get to help pets. So I would strongly encourage her to pursue that career. If she's got the grades to do it, go for it.
Yeah. What's the name of that cage, that cat cage that you...
Well, you know, I Googled it before we started because I knew you were going to, at some point we were going to end up talking about this. So if you just put in cage to bathe cats, you're going to find several of them that pop up. There's really not a specific brand name that I would go with, but it's got a platform. It's about probably 5 inches wide, and then it's a hoop that's probably about 12 to 18 inches long. It just kind of has this hoop effect, and you can just open the door, pop the cat in it, and then rinse them and soap them right through it. And we use it at our practice when we have to bathe a cat. And it's a godsend because they can't bite you, they can't scratch you, they can't run away, they can't hide under the couch full of soap suds. So it's really pretty handy.
Oh, man, that does sound handy. And Lynn, thank you for calling. Tom in Hollandale, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hey, hello.
What can we do for you?
I have a 13-year-old female Springer Spaniel who for many years has held up her left rear leg, and it's just getting progressively worse. I don't know if she's in pain, but she can't go up the stairs anymore. And when she sits down, she splays that left leg out at a funny angle. I can't tell if she's in pain, but then again, you can't really tell when dogs are in pain. X-rays at the UW Vet School showed nothing, really, except some bony stuff way down low on her leg. Any ideas? Okay.
Well, I'm glad you had her x-rayed, because that's the most important first step, is to make sure that we're not missing a torn cruciate, hip dysplasia, some other kind of damage. So there's a lot of good products on the market. There are pet foods that have glucosamine and anti-inflammatory levels of fatty acids in them that can reduce the inflammation in the leg. There are some great products on the market that will reduce pain and arthritis. So there's oral medications you can give every day. There's carprofen. There's amoxicillin. There's a number of them. Glucosamines come in a variety of different versions. My favorite one is dasiquin, made by Nutramax. And they just are in the process of announcing a brand new product coming to market. First thing that we've ever seen on the market for dogs, we have a cat equivalent that's a monoclonal antibody called Liberal. It's made by Zoetis, and it's going to be a game changer for dogs that have this kind of arthritis.
Let's talk more about that. We need to take a quick look at the news, Dr. Greer, but hold on to that, will you? And we'll bring that back up right after this look at the news. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here as we talk pet care today with our guest, Dr. Marty Greer. Dr. Greer is a veterinarian who specializes in canine pediatrics and reproduction. She founded Veterinary Village. It's a small animal clinic in Lamira, Wisconsin, and has a couple of satellites, if I'm not mistaken, in Sun Prairie as well. As we talk with her, I hope you'll join in with your own questions. Our lines are all filled, so we'll get back to the phones. But I want to go back to what we were talking about just before we broke for news, Dr. Greer, a new product.
Yes. So it's called Librela. It's made by Zoetis. It's a monoclonal antibody that specifically targets nerve growth factor in dogs that have osteoarthritis pain. It's super cool. Now, what's really interesting is that the cat product is already on the market. It's called Solensia. So usually we see dog products come with cat products to follow. This time the cat product hit the market first. It's given as a monthly injection. You have to go to the veterinarian for it. It is amazing. They've already released the Librela in England, the UK, and the videos that they showed us of these dogs with improvement is absolutely jaw-dropping. So if you have a pet, a dog or a cat that's suffering from osteoarthritis, and sometimes it's hard to tell, like your caller said, how do you tell if they're in pain? Well, if they're not using their leg, if they're not going up and down the stairs, if they're not getting up to move, to do things that they would have usually done when they were younger, it's probably not just that they're aging and slowing down. It probably is that they have some kind of pain. So if it's not being adequately managed by gabapentin or meloxicam or carprofen, or one of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories in that same class. There's Galliprant. And then, of course, there's all the great products that are on the market with the glucosamines and the chondroitin sulfates in them. If those aren't enough and the pet foods that have those in them aren't enough, then looking for a Librela or Solensia can really be a very valuable thing to work with your veterinarian on. Now, Librela hasn't been released to the market yet, but I'm looking at their website, and you can go ahead and put your name on here so that as soon as it's launched, that you can get in to see the veterinarian. And as soon as your vet can get this in stock, which of course there'll be a little bit of a delay from release until we can get it stocked and ready to go, it's absolutely stunning how much better these dogs and cats are moving. It's very impressive.
Oh, that is wonderful news. Let's take another call. Sue in Baraboo, we'll go to you now. Hi, Sue.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So my question is about the drug Apoquil. I have a six-month-old Scottish Terrier puppy that started showing, she licked all of the hair off all four paws, and so she was on 3 weeks of Apoquil with one vet. When I took her back for a recheck, it was a different vet that I saw that said, no, Apoquil is not to be given to puppies under 12 months. So it had already been done, but can you tell me, and I think that she explained a little bit, but would you please just talk about why you would not give that to a puppy under 12 months?
Well, we have to follow label directions, and there's indications that that is probably not the best choice for treatment. But I would be looking at why this dog has so many problems with their feet already, because most of the time we don't see those kinds of allergies until their second summer. So I'd be looking for the underlying cause, thinking something like Demodex as a mite that lives in the skin. Has the dog been on, has she been on any of the oral flea and tick medications like Simparica, Bravectone, NexGard, or Credelio?
Yes, she's got flea and tick, whatever is once a month given orally ever since I got her. So, yeah, she's been on. I will say that it seemed to start, the licking started because I have pine trees. She got into some pine sap, and that's when the licking started. But then it progressed, and the hair has not grown back. And, yes, I was very dismayed because I looked up Apoquil, and it says right there that you're not supposed to give it to 12 months. Is there anything else that I should be looking for?
Did you end up washing off her feet so that we could get rid of the sap, the pine tar, all those sticky things that are on there?
Yes, in fact, I did exactly what you said. Initially, I did Dawn, which did not do much of anything, but she does go regularly to a groomer who did get the pine out, and since then, I've not let her back in that area. So I'm very careful about that.
Right. And I think they're just concerned about using this in young puppies because we don't have any studies on the safety. So I don't think it's going to cause her any harm, but I would not repeat it. So if she's still uncomfortable, you can certainly use prednisone or another steroid, at least temporarily, until we get into the winter months and see if that makes a difference. You want to probably wash her feet when she comes back in from being outside, at least at bedtime, so that from the time you go to bed till the time in the morning, she's got that eight-hour stretch that her feet aren't being exposed to anything that's out in the grass, the pollens, the stuff that gets stuck to their feet. And you may want to make sure that they've done a skin scraping. That's where we take a little blade and we take some of the surface of cells of the skin off and look under the microscope to make sure that there aren't mites, like Demodex can be a really common problem in these young dogs that are experiencing those kinds of conditions. And sometimes if we don't get an answer any other way, a skin biopsy can be helpful. Seeing a dermatologist can be helpful. So there's certain things that you can do. I wouldn't, you know, get too upset that she was on it for 3 weeks. I don't think you've caused her any harm. But going forward, I would try to find an underlying problem for this and determine why she's doing this. Because before their second summer, we just generally don't see those kinds of allergies. Now, the other thing that you can try, and I'm not sure what she's eating, but Hill's makes a product that's egg-based called Derm Defense. And it is a new product on the market. It is a prescription product that you have to get from your veterinarian. But they've done research and shown that eggs are the least allergenic protein that we can feed our dogs. So that's one way to approach it, is it could be a food allergy that's causing her some problems. Purina makes a vegetarian diet that can also be helpful with dogs with skin and allergic problems. So I'd be looking at trying to approach this from a couple of different approaches. What's the cause? Can we change it with diet? Can we reduce her exposure from the pollens and the molds in the outside? And if she's really, you know, if you're really desperate because she's so uncomfortable, some prednisone in a short course at a low dose can really make her a lot more comfortable.
Good luck, Sue. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Tony in Wisconsin Dells, your turn. Hi, Tony.
Well, good afternoon. By coincidence, I picked up that I'm from Wausau, but I got a question. I have a almost 6-year-old Maine Coon male. Never had any problems, but as of late, he's fixed, pee in different spots of the house. I had to close my daughter's room because he was doing it in her clothes. I also have a black lab who loses a lot of hair right now, but he's a year old. So I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to stop him from doing this. And it's not that nasty spray smell because he's fixed, but still pretty annoying.
Sure. So he's sending you smoke signals that there's something wrong with his bladder. So the first thing I would do is make an appointment to have a urinalysis and an ultrasound of his bladder to look for stones, to look for an infection, to look for inflammation. We very commonly see this in cats that are young cats that have started associating the litter box and urinating in the litter box with discomfort. So they fail to use the litter box and they'll go other places because it doesn't hurt when he urinates on the carpet. It does, he thinks, when he goes in the litter box. So you want to check him out for any sign of inflammation, or it's called feline lower urinary tract disease, FLUTD for short. We used to call it FUS, but now we call it FLUTD. There's some good products on the market, both prescription and non-prescription for diet. But this is where you really want to make sure your veterinarian is involved in this, because this is probably a medical condition, and I don't want you to assume that it's purely behavior and get angry at him. He's trying to send you messages that he's got problems. Now, male cats are a lot more likely to have an obstruction of the urinary bladder than female cats. So he's giving you a chance to fix this before he ends up spending you a couple thousand dollars on the cost for veterinary care with an obstruction of his urinary bladder. So I would try to get an appointment as soon as possible with your vet to get this under control.
Yeah. I had that issue with one of my cats, too. And it's not fun, for sure.
No. And it's common. It's about 2 to 3% of all the cats. So it is not an uncommon condition. We see it very frequently.
Tony, good luck. Thank you. George Ann? In Winona, Minnesota, in Milwaukee, we go to you. Hi, Georgianne.
Hi. I have a question about medicating a dog for an airplane ride. She's a 70-pound Alaskan Husky. She's going to be traveling from Chicago to Stockholm. So I'm thinking that's an 8-hour flight. I'm just wondering what medications, if any, you recommend. I'm kind of worried about medicating her for a trip like that.
And we used to say not to medicate them, but we've gotten better with anti-anxiety medications in the veterinary space. So a couple of things you want to do is, number one, get her used to the carrier that she's going to be in so that it's not a strange environment for her. You can't completely replicate what's going to happen with air pressure changes and the sounds and all those things that happen on the flight, but try to get her accustomed to the carrier. Make sure she's got an absorbent bed underneath her so she's comfortable. And then, of course, you have to get all the health papers. That's all complicated by going overseas. And then before you travel, you want to get medication from your veterinarian so that you can try them out and figure out which one works best for her. Different dogs respond differently to anti-anxiety medications. Some dogs do really well on gabapentin. Some dogs do better on trazodone. Some dogs do better on Cilio. Some dogs do better on Alprazolam, which is Xanax. So you want to speak to your veterinary clinic and have a couple of those products at home and try them out and try to replicate her being in the crate for a few hours so that you know which one and what dose to use. Some dogs need a low dose of gabapentin and they're great. Other dogs need a higher dose. My personal dogs do better on gabapentin than they do on trazodone, but other dogs do better on trazodone than GABA. So unless you've tried it out, you don't really know. And the day before you leave is not the time to be checking it out. So speak to your veterinary clinic as soon as you can to get a handful of a couple of those medications and give them all a try.
Good luck.
Trip.
Yeah, safe trip, Georgianna. And boy, you're right about those papers, Dr. Greer. And sometimes the dogs have to be quarantined for a length of time, depending on the country.
Right. Usually Sweden, you don't have to do anything like that, but you do want to make sure the rabies is up to date, that you've got your health papers, that you've gone through all those things. I've imported dogs, I've exported dogs, and it is complicated. So you want to make sure that you've got all the paperwork done. You don't want to be standing at the gate at the airport trying to figure out how to get your dog on when it's, you know, under the gun. You have to have it done in advance. So speak to your veterinary clinic. APHIS, APHIS is the website that you go to for exporting dogs, and you can go in there yourself, click through all the pull-down menus, figure out what the requirements are to get into Sweden. Sometimes there are antiparasiticides that have to be administered. It's vaccinations. So make sure that you've gone through all that well enough in advance that you can get that done.
Sandy in Winona, Minnesota, we'll go to you. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. They have got a dog who's had her 2 months in a row now. It's had to be treated for hookworms. And we're doing a fecal exam 1 month after each treatment, so I'll be taking another one in towards the end of next week. Mm-hmm. I've been told they're hard to get rid of. Now, if it's positive again, you know, I asked her, should I be bringing a fecal exam in sooner? And she said, well, then I have to send it to a lab. And I'm just wondering, if this next one comes in positive, should I be doing them sooner?
Mm-hmm. So how often have you medicated the dog? Every 2 weeks, every 4 weeks? What drug are you using?
Every 4 weeks. Okay. Every 4 weeks.
And that's
twice.
Yeah, that's where your problem. Yeah, that's where your problem is coming in, is the life cycle of the hookworm is 3 weeks long. So if you're medicating every 4 weeks, then you're having a chance for those eggs to hatch out and develop into a new adult stage of the life cycle. So you want to go every 2 weeks with the medication. Panacure is a great drug. Parenteral Pamoate is. But we are starting to see some resistant hookworms. Where is the dog from? Is she from Minnesota or is she from somewhere else?
She's from she's a rescue from Indian Reservation in South Dakota.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they do come with some baggage. So you want to do an increased frequency. And then so you can give your heartworm preventive, like HeartGuard, Sentinel, Interceptor, Trifexis. Any of those have an intestinal parasite control product that will help. But if you're giving that every 4 weeks, you're not doing it often enough. So you want to do that every 4 weeks, and then halfway in between, so 2 weeks after the heartworm preventive is given, you want to do your 5 days of Panacure. And I do five, not three. And then there's some really great information on the CAPZ Vet website. It's CAPZ Vet, CAPCVET, CAPZ Vet, which is the Companion Animal Parasite Council Veterinary Council. And they've got a great array of parasite information, including hookworms. So, again, you go to a pull-down menu, go to CAPZ Vet, go to the pull-down menu for hookworms, and read through some of that because there are some newer recommendations on what to do with those resistant hookworms. But coming from that environment, it's a lot harder to get rid of those parasites than if you bought a dog from, you know, somebody local in Minnesota. They probably wouldn't have those parasites. It just comes with those environments, the southern tier of states, some of the other environments that we see rescues coming from, they do have more resistant parasites.
And as long as you were spelling, Mary in Green Bay called, couldn't stay with us. She's wondering if you could spell that new dog arthritis medication again.
Oh, sure. And I kind of rattled through it. It's Librela, Librela. And the cat one is Solensia, Solensia, not to leave our little cat friends out, because a lot of cats have arthritis and it's not identified by owners. Dogs, we tend to recognize a little bit earlier than in cats. So I think there's a lot of cats walking around out there that are uncomfortable and we just don't recognize it. So Solensia and Librela are the two products to be looking for. Solensia is on the market already. Librela is coming soon.
Rick in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I have a couple of follow-up questions based on other advice. As far as the teeth goes, I admit I am a let the bones and greenies clean the teeth. So if I do start cleaning the teeth, I think getting the front part of the teeth with the teeth closed would be easy. Do I need to go behind the teeth as well, which is a little scarier?
No. All you have to do is get the part that touches the lips. The part that the tongue touches does a pretty good job of keeping the inside of the arcade clean. It's the outer part for a couple of reasons. One is there's no friction, and two is that big premolar at the back, that big pointed tooth at the back, the salivary duct opens right above that, and it drips out saliva, which has calcium and other minerals in it. So it's just like a drippy faucet in your sink. It starts to develop those mineral deposits. So those are the teeth you really need to focus on, are the just the outer surface. And you don't have to open their mouth to do it. You can just slide the toothbrush in along the lip, and you can feel when you're on teeth. You've brushed your own teeth, I assume, for years. So you know what it feels like when you're on teeth versus gum. So just concentrate on that area.
Good luck, Rick. Thank you. And Connie in Portage, your turn. Hi, Connie.
Hi, Larry. I have a 19-year-old pulling her hair out on her stomach. And is getting hair everywhere. And I'm wondering if it could be psychological. She lost her mate, and then she lost her child who was with her for 15 years. And so I wondered, if she eats and she does everything, and she still wants her milk at night, but she's pulling her hair out.
Mm-hmm. It certainly can be psychological. So there are some cats that really do better with some anti-anxiety medications. I would also consider the possibility of her having a bladder problem, a bladder stone or a bladder infection, because that's right over the area where her bladder would be. And if she's uncomfortable, she may be trying to tell you something. So I would take her in and have her ultrasounded, check for stones, check for an infection. That's easy to do from most veterinarians that have an ultrasound machine. They can do that pretty effectively. But when you call to make the appointment, make sure that they know that's what you're looking for so they schedule you appropriately. If that isn't the case, then yes, you can certainly use gabapentin as an anti-anxiety drug. There's buspirone. There's a couple good anti-anxiety medications on the market for cats. And it's not a problem to give her something if she's struggling with the loss of those family members. It's okay to help her with some medication temporarily. Avoid the use of CBD and some of those other products that are over the counter that we don't really know what they do. Stick to the pharmaceutical products that we understand.
Connie, thank you. Tony in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, Tony.
Good morning or afternoon. I was wondering, we have a 5-year-old cat who had a dental cleaning and sealant maybe a year ago and had another sealant 6 months after that. And is that an effective way to treat the teeth rather than trying to approach that claws and the teeth by bringing her every day?
Yeah, it is a little exciting to brush a cat's teeth. They do make little tiny toothbrushes that are shaped correctly for their cat's mouth, and they do make little things to put on your finger, like for infants to brush their teeth. But there are some good cat foods on the market that have dental care products in them. Hill's makes a product called TD, which is a product that has the fibers lined up in it, sort of like shredded breeder Triscuits, so that as the cat crunches through the kibble, it helps to scrape the tartar off the teeth instead of them just, you know, kind of passively chewing. It actually helps with that. Some of them have products in them called sodium methyl hexates that have like the crystal part of your Colgate or your Crest toothpaste that help to cut the tartar. So there are some products on the market that can be not even, you don't even have to administer them. They're just in the food. So I would look for a dental care food. They do make cat greenies. So there are some products on the market that help. Brushing is always best, but it is tricky. I actually have one client whose daughter has taught her cat to floss her teeth. And I thought she was kidding, but I actually had her come in and put the cat on the exam table, and she showed me that she can floss her cat's teeth. I'm pretty impressed by anybody that can do that. That is not the norm. So don't set yourself up for failure.
Oh, man. Tony, thanks a lot for calling. As a matter of fact, greenies are my cat's cocaine, I guess.
Uh-oh. An addiction.
Literally addicted to, I think, to greenies. Actually, it's worrisome sometimes because she'll put off eating if she thinks she's going to get some greenies, for sure. But her teeth are really clean.
Yeah. OxyFresh makes a great dental product. Teef, T-E-E-F, has a probiotic in it that helps with oral health. So there's some good products on the market. You just have to look for them. Now, VOHC is a certification that's given for veterinary products that are certified by the Oral Health Association of Veterinarians that are verified helpful to your cat and your dog for dental health. So look for products with that VOHC stamp on them as certification that that's the best product to be using.
Dr. Greer, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being with us, and hopefully we can have you on again. Loved it.
I'd love to do it. Thank you.
Dr. Marty Greer, our guest, she founded Veterinary Village, a small animal clinic in Lemira, Wisconsin. It's doing very well. Lots of vets there to help you out, and help your cat out. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk with a man who's sailed every one of the Great Lakes, and we'll take a look at what to do with your food scraps. That is two kind of different topics. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.